In front of the sign when it was reading 130 in Death Valley yesterday, just in case you're complaining about the current weather. Again, 84 in Roseburg, KQEN News Time, 1236.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here today on Inside Douglas County. Kyle Reed from the Douglas Forest Protective Association. Practically an extra staff member this time of year with things going on. So let's look back at the weekend. We were just talking off the air here with the, one of the hottest days in history in Roseburg Saturday. Yesterday, it wasn't as warm as expected, but still 95. I think I was certainly expecting more to be going on the fire front over the weekend. How about DFPA?
Yeah, we staffed up, canceled days off, brought in some extra resources to prepare for the weekend between the hot temperatures and the threat of lightning. Luckily, nothing really came out of that, and we were able to have a somewhat normal weekend here for our firefighters.
Now, Friday, though, was a bit of a busy day.
Yeah, it was. So we started off with a fire, just before lunchtime out west of Sutherland off of Fort McKay Road and Crouch Road. And that was a fire that was caused by a downed power line. And that fire actually started out in the middle of a field, but that power line actually crossed across the fence and sparked a second fire about 500 feet down the fence line. So we actually had two fires burning out there. Combined total between the two of them was about an acre in size. So we were able to get that one taken care of pretty quickly. About the same time, we were heading to a reported burn out in the Kent Creek area outside of Dillard, and that was actually a pile that was burned the night before, allegedly. We arrived on scene, and that fire was unattended and still smoking, and we had to take some action to get that mopped up and taken care of. Again, we've talked about that a lot on the air this year, but that's something that we continue to see day after day is illegal burns. And then we ended the day Friday with a holdover burn up off of Wilbur Road. And that was actually a large machine pile that was burned this past winter that held heat. And we've talked about that in the past as well, is when you have those really large piles that are built with machinery, you tend to get a lot of dirt in there. And that dirt acts as insulation and doesn't allow that material to freely burn. And it'll sit there and smolder. And it'll smolder for months. We've had these pop up 6 to 9 months after they were originally burned. I don't know exactly when this one was burnt this winter, but obviously it was burnt quite a while ago and held that heat until we had these warmer temperatures.
Now, yesterday, while I was out walking around, somebody had actually texted me and said, "Is there fire?" And I think I got a text about that Saturday night as well. People wondered where all the smoke was coming from.
Yeah, and let me tell you what, I got inundated with questions on our Facebook page about that as well. We actually had a winds coming from the south the last couple days, and that brought up quite a bit of drift smoke from the fires in Northern California. And in places, it was strong enough you could actually smell that, not just see the haze in the distance, but actually smell the smoke. Had a couple different people in the Glendale area that was just convinced we had a new fire down there, and it turned out just to be that drift smoke.
Interesting. And of course, today there's a small fire, last night, northwest of Rogue River. And of course, that was a very small fire, so that's not an issue. Over in the Columbia Gorge, though, we've got a fire there, not super big. It's caused some problems burning a lot of structures and stuff. Any idea if the smoke from up there is headed this way at all, or is that not big enough to really be a factor?
Nope. So with the weather patterns that we've had, that smoke hasn't come down and affected this area at all.
Okay. So on Friday, we put up on our social media and on our website pictures of the single-engine air tankers that came in to be ready for the weekend. Talk about those.
Yeah, so we worked with the Oregon Department of Forestry to pre-position some single-engine air tankers here at the Roseburg Airport. So those are known as SEATs, and they're basically a fixed-wing aircraft that can hold up to about 800 gallons of either water, fire retardant, or a fire suppressant. And the nice thing about those, you know, stationed here in Roseburg is they have a pretty effective range of about 70 miles. So when you look at where we're at on the map, they can really cover, you know, Coos Curry, Jackson, Josephine, Douglas, and Lane counties very effectively. So we were able to bring those in, pre-position those here, and they actually used those on that fire yesterday in Josephine County. So they were used. We're going to have those through at least today, so we'll reevaluate the conditions to see if they're needed going into the next couple days. And if not, they'll either be released to go back to their home units or be redeployed other places in the state where they may be needed.
So are they privately owned, or are they owned by another fire agency?
Yeah, so these are from a private company, so they're a contract, and it's a call when needed. So, you know, working with the Department of Forestry, they have some severity funding that funds some aircraft that's used across the state. A lot of that's used for helicopters. So two of the helicopters that are stationed here in Douglas County are through that same funding mechanism. And then they have some short-term severity funding built into that as well, where they can, get some additional resources on these events where we have, you know, the really hot weather or the threat of lightning or things like that. So that's where all that came from.
Now, one of the things, and I see it's still a potential issue today, was the question of lightning.
Yeah, that was one of the things we were pretty worried about, going into this weekend on top of those triple-digit temperatures, was the threat of lightning. And we were very fortunate that lightning missed us. That lightning stayed to the south and to the east of us. Northern California and northern Nevada really got hit by that. But it also kind of came into the eastern portions of Oregon as well. Most of it was east of the Cascades, so Klamath, Lake County, north. A lot of it tracked, looks like, right up the Cascades. Some of that was wet, some of that was dry. And there are some new large fires across the state as a result of those storms in eastern Oregon.
So where do things stand right now? I mean, here we are, middle of August, not as much as normal, it seems like, in terms of fires, in spite of a hot summer.
Yeah, so right now we're sitting at 55 fires on DFPA protected land that's burned about 160 acres. So when you look at our 10-year stats for today's date, we average about 65 fires up to this point that burn about 6,000 acres. So, you know, a lot of those acres are from the large fires that have happened, Douglas Complex, Stouts Creek, Cable Crossing, Milepost 97, Horse Prairie. Those larger fire events really skewed those 10-year average numbers. The other thing, though, to look at here is we haven't had much lightning here in Douglas County this year. Out of the 55 fires that we've had, we've only had one lightning-caused fires, and that was actually before fire season started. So we're actually above normal human-caused fires, because on the 10-year average, out of the total number of fires, of 65 fires that happen, about 18 of those fires are typically lightning fires right now. So we're above normal right now for human-caused fires. So again, those are fires that were caused one way or another from human activity, didn't have to happen, and could have been prevented.
Are any of those related to folks out camping, because it's one of the few things they can actually do, or is it more people just on their own property?
You know, we've seen a wide range of everything this year. Everything from equipment fires. So equipment category is probably the leading category year in, year out for us. And it's kind of a catch-all for a lot of different activities. Everything from power lines to vehicles to power saws and lawnmowers and kind of everything related to that kind of stuff. So we've had 25 fires in that category. But we have had an increase in recreation-related fires, everything from campfires to fireworks and other things like that. And then the list goes on through our other normal causes of smoking and debris burning and those kinds of activities.
Going to take a break at Inside Douglas County. More with Kyle Reed when we come back. The interview podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Inside Douglas County, 1247. Lars Larson coming at 1 on News Radio, 1240 KQEN. This is Inside Douglas County, where tomorrow, County Public Health Officer and one of the governor's health advisors, Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, will be with us. Kyle Reed of the Douglas Forest Protective Association, giving you kind of an overview of the fire situation in the area. Now, this week, once we get past today, we're basically plus or minus a degree around 90 for another week. That seems so cool after 108, oddly as that sounds. Do you see people relax sort of their caution when you get down to more normal hot temperatures? Are we more likely to see more this week because of that?
Yeah, you know, typically when we have really hot temperatures, people are kind of kegged up inside around the air conditioner for obvious reasons. We do typically see a spike after these warm spells where, you know, people get back out, they start doing things again in the yard and out and recreating and different things, and fire activity does seem to increase in the after those warm temperatures. You know, the big thing here to note is, yes, we are going to cool down a little bit to the, you know, low 90s or so, but the impact with the really hot temperatures we saw the last couple of days on the fuels and vegetation really left its mark. You know, the smaller diameter stuff is, you know, almost record lows for us in terms of fuel moisture, which means they're, you know, very prone to fire. The larger diameter stuff, we kind of call those 1,000-hour fuel moistures. They're pretty close to average for us, which is pretty low for this time of year. So the fuels are very receptive right now to fire starts.
I even noticed in my yard, I've got a sprinkler system, and I water like 2 to 3 times a week for longer periods. Even with that, you know, my yard is not looking as good right now just after the past week. One of the things that comes up with fires, and I often hear this on the scanner, is a fire situation develops, and it could be other types of, you know, commercial fires too, where firefighters are trying to get to the fire, but then there's this issue of a power line or power situations where you're trying to get the fire out, but you can't do anything until the power's out.
Yeah, happens quite a bit, actually, whether, you know, it's a structure fire that's spread, you know, obviously there's power that goes to those, or it's a power line that's come down for a number of different reasons. So that always makes things a little bit harder there when you've got power lines involved. You know, luckily we've got really good working relationships with Pacific Power and Douglas Electric. You know, we've gone to each other's trainings the last handful of years and helped each other out. You know, our forest officers and engine crews actually go out and do power line inspections throughout the county, looking for those trouble spots where there could be potential issues with fires. And we've done that for a number of different years. But fires in power lines and power line related fires have been on the uptick in the last, you know, 8 or 10 years for a number of different reasons, and have got a lot of headlines because of the fires in California between the Camp Fire and the Thomas Fire, and, you know, the number of different fires there in Central California that were power line related in the last couple of years.
So what are some of the causes of these power line fires?
You know, so we see everything from you know, vegetation both inside and outside of the right-of-way. So, you know, when you talk about the right-of-way, the power company has about a 30-foot right-of-way that they can maintain legally. So when you think about that, you know, it's 15 feet on each side of those power lines, and that's not really all that far. So they do a really good job keeping the vegetation out of that area, whether it's stuff growing up into it or branches coming over next adjacent to those lines. But when you've got a 100-foot plus tall tree standing 40 feet up the hillside, and if that comes down, you know, that's outside of their right of way, but it does threaten those lines. And that's exactly what we saw here a couple weeks ago on the fire up Highway 130 or Highway 38. We had a fire up there between Elkton and Drain, and that was a large dead tree that came down, you know, 75 feet or so up the hillside from the power line. So that's always a big issue there. Some of the other ones that we see on a regular basis, though, is animals that get up into places they shouldn't and cause sparks or get electrocuted and fall down. We see, you know, vehicle accidents that bring power lines down. And then there's weather-related stuff as well. We had one here a couple weeks ago with some strong winds that caused the lines to arc. And then obviously there's always a possibility for just a, you know, mechanical failure with something to do with the lines or transformer or something with that. You know, again, when you think about how old the infrastructure is, you know, it is an aging infrastructure, especially when you get to the rural parts of the county. So that does play into it as well.
What about animals? Is it mainly squirrels?
You know, it's either squirrels or birds, and it's pretty easy to pinpoint those causes when that happens. You know, they don't get too far away from the power pole when that happens.
Yeah, I've even seen that happen on my house where a transformer goes out, it takes a few houses out, and you hear noise, and you look outside, and then you see the squirrel, you know, down below the pole. So for people recreating, how does that contribute to fires? Do you see very many of those?
Yeah, we do. And that number is up a little bit this year. We've had 9 fires that have been related to recreational activity. You know, seven of those have been campfires, you know, that were, you know, either got away or abandoned. And then we've had a couple of firework related fires as well this year. So again, I think, you know, people are trying to come up with some creative ways to stay active and do different things with all the shutdowns. But again, please, you know what's going on, know the fire restrictions and the possibilities out there with your actions.
Now, on Friday, the Umpqua National Forest went to very high for their area. But here for DFPA, you're at extreme, right?
That's correct. Yeah. So we have a 4-level fire danger rating adjective system. So we don't have the very high level like the Umpqua National Forest does.
So is very high their top number?
They have an extreme as well.
Okay. So it just kind of divided up a little bit differently scientifically.
Correct.
Okay. I don't think I'd seen the very high in recent memory, or some, if I did, I just didn't remember it. So I was curious about that. So for extreme fire danger in the Douglas Forest Protective Association lands that you're dealing with, remind people of some of the things they should not be doing.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously there's several activities under the public use restrictions that are tied to the fire danger levels. And those are the mowing of dead or dry grass, the cutting, grinding, or welding of metal, power saws that are used for non-industrial purposes, and then other power-driven machinery that's used on private property for improvements or developments that aren't listed in the restrictions. So any of those activities are prohibited during extreme fire danger. And, you know, those are, you know, obvious fire starters. You know, when you think back to the Stouts Creek fire, for example, that was an individual that was mowing dry grass on a day very similar to what we saw this weekend. So, you know, those are all activities that could easily start fires, which are why they're restricted. Some of the other stuff that we have doesn't change, but, you know, stays the same over the course of the summer. So that's going to, you know, be debris pile burning or burn barrels, which we've continued to run on almost a daily basis this summer. You know, smoking is restricted in wildland areas, so you've got to stay in a vehicle or a designated site. Campfires, again, are only allowed in designated campgrounds. Off-road driving is restricted, so you've got to stay on improved roads. You need to have your fire tools and water with you. Electrical fence controllers are also restricted, so you need to have, you know, certified electrical fence controllers. We don't really see the issues like those like we used to in years past, but that's still something we watch out for. And then again, you know, fireworks, exploding targets, and tracer ammunitions are all restricted as well, with sky lanterns, which are actually prohibited in Oregon year-round.
You know, it's interesting, the California fires over the weekend when I was in listening to our national news, those, and I was thinking about it as I heard repeated reports Saturday morning about just how fast those were spreading. And I don't remember the particular fire name down there, but there was one of them where it was consuming several football fields every 1 second.
Yeah, you know, a football field's about an acre in size, so you figure an acre per second, it's moving pretty quick there. And part of that's gonna be, you know, the fuels that it's burning in. So if it's a, you know, predominantly grassy area, that can burn very quickly. But also, you know, you start throwing in, you know, some terrain on that and some wind, and that can definitely influence your fire behavior.
And in fact, that particular fire had gone from, I think, less than 100 acres to 10,000 acres in just a really minuscule amount of time.
Yeah, I don't have any particulars on that fire or the other fires down there. I've seen some headlines recently, but you know, we've had those extreme conditions up here as well, where we had like the Stouts Creek fire, for example, that you know, started off at 2 acres when we arrived on scene shortly after 1 o'clock, and was, you know, 6,000 plus acres by nightfall. So those fires can move very quickly given the right conditions, the terrain, and a little bit of a wind.
Kyle Reed is a fire prevention officer for the Douglas Forest Protective Association. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me again.
1258 News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team, News Radio 1240 KQEN.